So the health critic for the Ontario Liberals is Dr. Adil Shamji. We talk about the overturning of Bill 124, healthcare as a static state, and the importance in having conversations about reframing healthcare. Dr. Shamji and myself on Toronto Today. Thanks for making the time for our show.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me and for covering this really important issue.
Well, let's wind the clocks back to 2019 when you hear, and this is before you're running, before you're in politics, when you hear about Bill 124, that it's going to cap wages of healthcare workers. What did that do to morale inside hospitals?
Well, it started everything off on a wrong foot. Healthcare workers, nurses in particular, well, all healthcare workers work really, really hard. And to think that their wages could be capped at even at that early stage in, prior to the pandemic, to have their wages capped at a rate that was well under the rate of inflation was wrong to begin with. And then to have continued with this wage capping legislation through the pandemic at a time when the government insists that they are honoring and respecting healthcare workers, but certainly not acting like it, to have continued with that is just downright insulting and demoralizing. And that is only underscored by Doug Ford's apparent decision to go ahead and appeal this decision after it has been declared to be coercive and unconstitutional.
On the front line, did you talk to people who said, look, I know I can't just walk in, and no one can in private industry, and say, this is what I want, you have to give it to me. But it is that sort of back and forth. There is a process of bargaining if you're in a private company. And there's also clearly, if you're in a union, the idea that we have a right to fairly and freely bargain collectively with our employer in that circumstance. And it got ripped away from people.
Absolutely. I mean, with Bill 124 was just the first of many additional steps that this government has taken to infringe upon constitutional rights and collective bargaining rights. I mean, we just saw it very recently with Bill 28, which was a legislation that made it illegal for QP workers to go on strike in order to secure a fairly bargained wages. They did it with Bill 124, of course. This government keeps resorting to coercive measures in order to achieve their policy gains. Their policy objectives. They've also done it with Bill 7. That's the legislation that says if you're an elderly person in a hospital, you will be sent to a long-term care home, whether you like it or not, whether it is one of your choice or not. And if you don't, you'll be fined $400 a day. That's not how democracy is supposed to work. That's not how government is supposed to work.
I heard about celebrations yesterday in hospitals. Does the pushback against the wage cap, does this decision improve morale? Could this keep more people in the industry as opposed to leaving it?
I would have felt more confident that it will help keep people in the, in the profession if Doug Ford hadn't taken the step to propose appealing it. Mm-hmm. There was a possibility that Bill 124 had been a decision that hadn't been fully thought through, and perhaps that he would allow it to expire and healthcare workers would have a hope that they could secure better wages in the future. There was a belief that perhaps it wasn't because Doug Ford didn't believe in their inherent worth. But the decision to double down now, to appeal that decision, I think runs the risk of actually being even more demoralizing, because it says to healthcare workers, Doug Ford has seen, Doug Ford has seen how we feel. He sees what we do in hospitals every day. And he still doesn't think that it is worth it for us to get paid fairly in the midst of a pandemic, even after a court has told him that this is an unconstitutional act.
Dr. Adil Shamji, our guest on Toronto Today. I'm going to go sort of big picture politics wise, but stay with healthcare. This is what people tell me. They think you could be an incredibly important voice for the Ontario Liberal Party moving forward. I know you still have to get a leader, and you still have to plan how you're going to attack the Ford government and try and become the next government. But they say you're going to be really important. If we can reframe healthcare, I think most people look and say maybe it's the Ontario Liberals are going to do it. And you also have to, as a party, differentiate yourselves from the NDP. I think that was a problem last time out with the party platform. That's me saying that. Am I on the right track with that? Does there have to be some differentiation? Do we have to have some rethinks about how we're doing healthcare in the province?
There definitely have to be some rethinks about how we do healthcare in the province and about how we conduct ourselves. I think one thing that very clearly defines us from other opposition parties is that we don't just see ourselves as an opposition party that says no. We say, government proposes bills, they can be better. They can be more constructive and more pragmatic. And I think that vision of hope and ambition and not just saying no, is one thing that certainly defines us. With regards to how we view healthcare, you know, the perspective that I like to bring isn't just that healthcare is about nurses and doctors, other hospital professionals and hospitals and clinics, but that all policy is health policy, meaning that in order to achieve full, you know, physical, emotional, and social well-being for all of us, we need to get everything right. Housing, education, we need to protect the greenbelt and the environment. And I think with an enlightened perspective like that, I think the Liberal Party is going to have a very strong showing, you know, in the next election. And I sincerely believe that that will be to the benefit, I hope, of everyone here in Ontario and patients in particular.
I'm seeing a lot of data of RSV cases dropping in hospitals. I'm seeing a lot of data that shows our hospitalizations are down. You wanted there to be universal masking 2 weeks ago. You were adamant that Dr. Kieran Moore disappointed you 16 days ago with not going with a mask mandate. Do you reflect differently upon it now? Looking, if you looked at the data I looked at, would you have changed your mind?
Well, what we're seeing is that RSV cases are going down and influenza cases are going up. We know that tens of thousands of students every day are missing school in our classes across the province. And we're still seeing unprecedented pressures across the entire province on our pediatric healthcare capacity. Our pediatric ICUs are still overwhelmed. Emergency departments still have wait times through the roof. And patients are experiencing pediatric surgeries are still getting canceled. And so we need to do everything that we can. I think universal masking in a limited setting, such as in schools, is an important step that we can take now for as short of a time as possible, of course, but just to preserve that healthcare capacity until such time as we can open things up, get surgeries back and going, and make sure that there aren't any kids who are suffering because they can't access our healthcare system in a timely manner.
I hear that. And this is what I'd say with great deference. You and I could have, a drink, dinner and dessert and pay for the check. And we might not agree that it's the best thing to do because I just haven't seen. I think there's a huge burden of proof 33 months in to prove that masking is going to make a difference on a 5 or 6 year old. Because I think there are harms and I think our kids have been really vulnerable through this process. And I can't advocate for covering their faces while learning and growing and developing anymore and thinking that it would change the hospital capacity. And I'm all with you on all these other massive issues that are really important.
You know, I entirely respect your opinion. I may actually take you up on lunch or dinner one of these days. we have seen some evidence, more than some evidence, a lot of evidence, even coming out of the schools in the United States, that masking as recently as earlier this year did make a difference, even in specifically the school environment. But to exactly the point that you're making, I don't think that, you know, masking, whether in children or in everyone, is the one and only solution to everything that's going on in our healthcare system. And if anyone walks away from this interview thinking that's the only thing that we're calling for, or we think that that will solve all our problems, that's simply not true. We need to get our health human resources right. We need to make sure that our nurses, our paramedics, all of the healthcare workers that make our healthcare system run, we need to make sure that they are addressed. We need to make sure that everyone is adequately vaccinated. COVID and influenza vaccinations right now continue to be incredibly underwhelming. So all of these things need to be addressed. And so honestly, Greg, we can both be right. It's okay.
Yeah, no, there's massive, massive issues and I want to stay on them. And I know you do too. Thanks for the time today, doctor. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Take care. Have a great day.
Dr. Adil Shamji, our guest on Toronto Today.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his 6-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his 2-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.